Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is August 15th. I just saw it on my phone. I was trying not to see it, but I seen it. So there it is.
Okay.
August 15th.
I know you're disappointed in me. So nobody cares about you in this day.
I know. It's just me. It's just my own thing. I don't know why I don't give a flying.
Yo, nah. Shit. Shout out to my man Cliff. My man Cliff listens. And he really texts me like, yo, he really don't know the date like that.
Like, what's wrong with that?
Yo, like, yo,
no, for
dead.
Real.
He was dead serious.
Like, you all right? He good? Oh, man. So, yeah, it's been a long week for me. I had a meeting with the artist on Monday, and I have stuff to do today, and I'm flying another artist in tomorrow, and then my aunt is having her 70th birthday party on Friday.
Oh, wow.
Ugh. Yeah, I'm kind of
tired. You got a lot going
tired.
On.
Yeah, I got a lot
Where's that party going to be at? Because I'm 1,000% positive that food is going to be phenomenal.
out of Queens. Yeah.
You might just hit me, man, if you need a ride or something, man.
Right.
Yeah, I wrap you up a plate and some noodles for him.
Yeah.
Put a little cake on the side too.
Exactly.
How's everybody doing today? So week so
happy
far.
Happy 80th birthday to Auntie Maxine.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Leo's birthday today. A lot of Leos. One day past birthday to Angelique Miles, friend of the show.
Yep.
Her birthday was yesterday. I guess, Tulum in Mexico?
Oh, she's in Tulum.
Yeah.
Tulum, yeah. See, but I've seen on Instagram, I guess that's the hot spot. I've seen a few people down there.
Well, there's a part of it that's really like a hot spot to party, but there's a part of it that's like a hot spot for wellness and like retreat and yoga shit and meditation.
It's a wellness
and it's
thing.
Also very close to like the ruins and the Mayan ruins. Is it Mayan ruins? One of them. And
it's the Mayan
and all
ruins.
That shit. Yeah. It's pretty close to there.
Okay,
I actually wanted to do a New Year's Eve in Tulum because it's not like party Mexico like Cancun or something like that.
It ain't like Cancun, Acapulco.
But it's
yeah.
gorgeous. Yeah, but it's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pictures look nice. I saw Nicole Plantin.
Yeah.
She's there now too. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody else post from there as well, like within the last few days. I guess it's like
it's vacation season. Yeah.
It really
like,
is.
You ain't got it,
really
it in
is.
Yet. Yeah, everybody's on the vineyard.
Yeah.
Or, you know, still out in the Hamptons or
wherever
you want to go.
Yeah, exactly. I just kind of checked out these last couple of weeks. It's like, it's over, man.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give a big shout out to Storm and Norman and the Sunday Sermon crew. We all were there. Sunday past.
Even Sean, who's never come.
Bruh came. So bruh was, let's ask you first.
He was there for like a hot second.
Times.
He was there for like an hour. You put in a good hour.
He was there long enough.
No, I was there for.
He got the vibe.
Yeah, I was there for about 2 hours or so.
Okay.
It was everything I expected.
Mm-hmm.
I was so, I don't know really how to explain it. There's a warm feeling, man, when I see my folks. There's a connection, man. Like, you know, when you're looking for parking and, you know, dude point to the spot. Yo, my man,
right.
Get ready, pull out. You
yeah.
know, it's
yeah,
just,
yeah. Go up here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My man.
Exactly. There's just a vibe that you can't really articulate. And then you don't know them people. We say this all the time. Like, I don't know them people, but I know them
but you
people.
Know them.
You know them
yeah.
people.
Exactly.
You know
them. Yeah, and
you
I just.
You know everybody
I,
in that park.
Exactly. And it was crazy because so many people I saw post that they were there that you didn't even see.
Right. And the thing is, the park, the thing about St. Nick Park is that it's not even that big.
Yes.
But it's on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
So my crew, and Jeff, you tend to kind of migrate between the middle and the top. But my crew, my crew posts up at the top because there's a bunch of big trees back there. So that's where the shade
And the top flattens out as well.
Yeah, and the top flattens out. And like, because we just like to sit up there with a bunch of food and a bunch of drink and people watch. That's our thing. Like, we sit up there and people watch. But the action, like the place where people actually dance, is all the way at the bottom of the hill. So there's a whole, bunch of action in between. And every time it the event happens, people be like, "I see you, I see you," because I really don't walk. I do like one lap down the hill, and I come back up, and that's it. If I ain't catch you on that, if you don't make your way to the top, I ain't gonna see you.
Yeah, some people kind of walk around a lot, but I definitely do the same. I kind of like find a spot to kind of post up and to eat, drink, and be merry. And
yeah, we'd be laid out. I was prepping for the sermon. It's like whatever. One year I took a nap out that bitch. Like, it's just.
Oh, I remember that year.
You remember that year?
Yeah, well, you had a nutcracker.
I had a nutcracker. Yeah,
but you was down. Like, she was like sleeping
over there.
She was like sleeping.
I was like, real sleeping.
It wasn't like no little light sleep, like nigga. You sleep.
I was sleep for like a good 40 minutes. Real talk.
Yeah, but it was a great. It was everybody said it was a great time, and I said it, you know, like not even in jest, like because it was supposed to rain that day, and you know, was people really worried about the weather, and I really believe like it was like all that, you know, positive, you know, black loving energy that like cleared them skies, because it was no clouds in the sky, and then like that evening it poured like a fountain.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel like we all that black positivity kept up.
As a matter of fact, I hit you and said, "Yo, I really think God don't ever want me to go see."
Because
it was so bad. It was just like I was like, "Oh man, this is another." And it's only like once or before, once, but it was only,
this year. This is the only one. And it was pouring rain in Brooklyn. Because a friend of mine told me she didn't think Sunday sermon was happening because it was raining so bad in Brooklyn. And somebody was like, and she was telling somebody it must be headed that way. And they were like, nah, ain't nothing headed this way.
Yeah, it's clear. So I guess peace to us.
It was a great day in Harlem. That was also the 60th anniversary of A Great Day in Harlem. And it was a great day in Harlem.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that was actually 60th day anniversary. Mm-hmm. Too. I saw a picture. I didn't know it was that particular day.
Yeah.
But, so I just wanted to, say that and, peace to everybody who came and everybody who I saw and didn't see. But everybody had a great time. I want peace to the system for performing.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it just one dude from the system?
Yeah, it's just the guy. It's just the lead. No. It was only two of them anyway. So it was just, the white guy stay home now, I guess. So let's jump on into it. We got a couple of big, premieres on TV this past weekend as well. So Saturday night was on My Own. You know, I love My Own now.
Love Your Own.
I love My Own. It was Fixing My Life, featuring Nephi and Solo again.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that came on called Mind Your Business with what is the gal's name? Masika, I believe.
Masika from Love and Hip Hop.
No. She's a businesswoman. If I'm not mistaken, and I have to kind of look it up, but I believe that she got an award this year at Culture Creators.
Okay,
I'm almost sure that was the same woman. She has developed hair care products, and has like it's like a multi-million dollar business. Like she does really, really well with it. So there's a show called Find Your Business, where she it's kind of like what Gordon Ramsay does at restaurants, where she goes to different black businesses and kind of helps
them in shape.
Yeah, whips them into shape and helps them kind of get their shit together. So the first episode just passed was a black family that owned a soul food restaurant in Carson, California. And the daughter ran the restaurant. She took $100,000 loan from her parents' retirement to open this restaurant. Hasn't paid back 10 cents, of course.
No, because it's a restaurant.
because the restaurant, I mean, for what it's worth, the food looked great. The food right. looked, it was, you know, barbecue and stuff like that. Look, they had the big, huge barbecue, stove with the oven and all, I mean, with the wood and all that. It looked like the restaurant physically looks decent, but she looks like she's literally hiring like criminals and like ex-cons. Like everybody in the restaurant was like drunk, high, or like just fighting. It was crazy. Lord. And she's checked out because she just had a baby. Did you watch? Did either one you watch?
I watched about a smooth 7 minutes of that.
Okay.
I think she had a baby. I could barely get through Ayala.
Yeah, I think she had the baby's father's that light-skinned drunk that work at the restaurant with her, but whatever. That's for another day.
Yeah.
So she's kind of checked out because she's got this baby. Her brother lives like way far away, so he's not around. Her mother and father there, but you know, they're older and they're trying, and it was,
honestly, with what I saw, I was just turned off. I was just turned off by the story. Because the woman who runs the restaurant basically mm-hmm. is a trained chef. Right.
Yeah.
She's a legit trained chef. And what's happening is the common problem of a person who is a creative person trying to run a business.
Right.
And in fact, trying to run the hardest business you possibly can. There right. is so little room for error. Her brother, the older brother, seems to be a person that is more in tune and really expressed about, you know, sort of being there day to day, which also led me to believe that she kind of pops in and
she plays boss.
Yeah, I'm saying. But even in that short period, it just told me, okay, she pops in, she plays boss when it's time for her to recreate.
And she gets on everybody's nerves.
And she gets on everybody's nerves and turns the restaurant upside down and I'm the motherfucking boss and all that sort of shit.
And then leaves.
And leaves. And I was honestly, I just could not listen to a story in which another black couple, you know, basically leverage their future on their children's yeah. dream. And their children's dream was a goddamn, was brothers barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like what are we doing parents, here?
Because her parents are definitely in their 70s. Like, they are not young.
Right.
So, like they're, like, you know, an older couple who, you know, probably worked hard and obviously and, you know, got the retirement. Like you said, now, like Sean said, they're giving $100,000 out of their retirement, which they're not getting. But even at the end of the whole thing, it was like, Mom and Dad, we got a big surprise for you. Our first payment back for the loan, it was a check for $500. It's like, I guess it's $500 more than you right. had yesterday, but it ain't
right.
nothing like.
But, and here's the worst part about that is that there's no interest on that loan. They're right. only going to pay back what they had. And so now, even if they got back $100,000 10 years from now, when they were 80,
yeah,
like right. the inflation cost, the cost of yeah. living is just increased. Like there's just so many things. Like to me, that is such. It is so disheartening to see such financial irresponsibility with
yeah.
the people who are the most vulnerable in our family. Like that mm-hmm. bothers me because I yep. feel like
right. grandma, when you, grandpa.
When you go to the because of course they gonna want first of all they want to see you happy, they want to see you your dream, and then you know
right.
they come from a generation of feeling like you know there was a sense of do for self and you know
right.
we gotta own our own businesses and do all of that sort of shit, and they $100,000 man
yeah.
like that
yeah.
is no that is not fuck like that's a lot of coin man
yeah and I mean I don't know about the demographics but. I mean, Carson, there's obviously a black population in Carson, California, but it ain't like a restaurant in Los Angeles. Like, how
right.
big is how much traffic are you getting in Carson, California for a barbecue soul food restaurant? It ain't gonna be like it ain't like you're in Houston. You know what I'm saying? Where it could be packed out. So it was.
And I'm looking at the equipment and shit, and I'm like,
yeah.
oh, y'all really went
they spent
full
some
on. I'm like, yo, why y'all just say y'all couldn't get Big Reg back there with two what, smokers?
With a drum and the drum, you know what I'm saying? It's where your drum in here,
yeah.
Reg, with
yeah,
the towel on his shoulder
man.
And shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so this week coming up is the girl Megan James from Basketball Wives. has some fashion line. So her name is
Started doing these reality show people's fashion lines, this gonna be a whole nother type of show.
Yeah, her name is I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but her name is Mahesia Dellinger. That's the woman's name who's on the show.
I don't know her name, but I'm 100% positive you fucked it all the way.
Yeah, I fucked
that name all up.
I fucked that name all the way up. And so then we also have Ayanna Van Zandt on Saturday night, which, with the return of Nefi and Solo, who are in a worse place than even the last time. I mean, both of them just a mess. Nefi again apparently showed up super late. Solo 45 minutes late. Solo definitely looking like he's still drinking. His gut done got bigger.
Oh, he's sucking out that bottle.
Yeah, he's sucking out the bottle. Nephi's cursing him out like it's going like to the point where Ayanna was genuinely pissed off. Like
I've never seen her that for real mad at people.
She was mad. Like, y'all, were you wasting my time? At both of them. Like, this is bullshit. Like, y'all ain't done nothing since the last time we saw each other, and now you're going to call me back, and you're just straight up wasting my time.
Yeah. And she was like, I'm not going to go through this with you just for... I do appreciate this. Ayanna said there's a point at which you're exploiting people's pain. And she was like, neither one of them are in a position to really do the work, and I'm not going to sit here and do this just for entertainment value while y'all sitting here acting a fool on TV. And I appreciated that. Like, she left. She was like, I'm out.
Yeah, like, she's gone. Yeah,
I'm not doing it just so y'all could be on TV acting crazy. But yeah, Nefi definitely is bipolar. She definitely needs some meds. She's definitely
been,
in denial.
She's been clinically diagnosed as bipolar. Yeah.
And then was like, but I'm not.
Yeah.
And Ayanna was like, what if you are? She's like, but I'm not. And she's like, but what if you are? like you've been diagnosed.
And said that, you know, when she took her medication, I guess it made her feel spacey, so she just stopped taking it. And it doesn't seem like financially they're in a better space. It just seemed just like a horrible, horrible, horrible situation, man. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I bet. And I ain't no pharmacist, but I bet she didn't want to take that medication because she probably couldn't take it and drink.
Right.
Yeah. Drink and smoke.
Probably would have had to leave all that other stuff alone.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it was a typical island, but as y'all said last week, I like a better mess. So I enjoyed it immensely.
Oh my God, yeah.
It was really good,
and I agree with you guys. It's the same with Ayanna. Like, the fact that she, you know, just sort of, you know, at a certain point, she drew her line in the sand, like, you know, enough is enough. And, mentioned, like, this seems to be their career. Their career is being, couple. Yeah, like being this dysfunctional couple. Yeah. It's their thing. Yeah. And... Yeah. You know, at some point they have to recognize that this shit is just like, not only is it just not cool, like you niggas are 40.
Right.
Like, is this the rest of your life?
Yeah.
Like, is this the rest of your life?
And they got five children.
Their whole entire existence, in my opinion, has been messy from the start, from the way they've met, from the way they've, formed their relationship and marriage, how they've acted in the relationship and marriage. And, you know, there's pain and shit that none of them are willing to sit down and address. And, you know, it's just this cycle of yelling, screaming, but we can't leave because we just not in a position to leave.
Yeah, we stuck with each other because ain't nobody got no paper, you know.
Right.
I'll be watching the whole season. I'm going with y'all niggas.
This is actually just part two of the season that had Trina and all of them on it. It's not even a brand new season.
We're still in season.
This is just the back end of season one.
Okay. Well, shit. All right. Well, come on, Ayanna. Shit. You know.
I think it would have been a little bit more. But she's been on break for a long time.
It's been a minute because it was winter time. It was winter when Trina was on there. And then Sunday we had Sunday sermon, beautiful day, and they went home that night and turned on. I watched Ballers like. in and out. I wasn't really locked into Tough One, and I got to watch it again. But the big premiere on Sunday night was Insecure.
Yeah.
Issa Rae's obviously hit TV show, first episode of season 3. And so what did y'all think about the episode?
I thought it was a good establishing episode. It caught us up with everybody. You know, I'm ready to get, I mean, I understand that this episode, it was important for us just to know mainly what Issa was up to and what Molly was up to, but I'm excited to get to the rest of the friends. Cause remember, Tiffany has this whole thing going on with the baby and it might be her coworkers and all of that stuff. So I'm ready to see.
Oh, I forgot about the coworker shit.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I forgot all about that. Yeah. Wow. I totally forgot about that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this episode started with Issa, in a still pretty fucked up situation, living situation. She's living with, I was tripping because last week I kept calling him David and as an old Daniel. Nigga. I mean, you know, David, his name was Daniel.
Well, it started with us thinking her and Daniel were fucking. The opening shot was a sex scene and we knew it was Daniel, but we assumed that the dark skinned woman he was with was Issa. Exactly. But then there's a smash cut to Issa laying on the couch. Listen. Looking at his closed bedroom door, aggravated because Shorty in there is putting on a show. So I thought that was interesting. I thought that was a fun opening because everybody thought the same thing. And then it was like, oh, actually, never mind. But that already let us know right off the bat what was going down in there.
Yeah. And then, so, you know, they have a whole thing where she's obviously feeling away. So she gets up and leaves and we find out that she's driving Lyft. Now,
already left.
To make a little extra paper. She still has a job at We Got Y'all, but she's been like kind of demoted. Not kind of, she's been demoted, and she's in the doghouse at the job. So she's driving Lyft to earn some extra paper, hopefully to get enough money to move out on her own. And so, which I just on a bigger picture, I was like, it was pretty genius for the Lyft idea was pretty genius because obviously it. It opens up her being moving around LA.
Right.
It opens up her, all these different characters coming in and out of the car. Characters that for the most part, we'll probably only see once, you know, in a show. So it kind of just kind of gives a whole different dimension besides her kind of core friends that she hangs out with. Like we get to kind of see her interact with all these, you know, kind of weirdos. So I thought that was very, legitimately somebody might do that in her situation to earn some paper to try to get some money up. So, I thought it was really genius whoever introduced that, plot line to the show. But so she's driving Lyft and then they cut to Molly who's in like, Mexico, maybe Tulum.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, living her best life because she's about to start a new job at another law firm. And it was kind of showing the dichotomy between their lives as far as finance goes. Like Molly's like chilling, you know, live on the beach drinking a something with some, you know, some good looking guy.
With some island like, dick. Yeah.
Exactly. And then Issa's in the damn, you know, Lyft picking up crazy people
who are throwing up in her car.
Yeah, we're throwing up in her car and it was a lot going on. And like I said earlier, Issa's also in the doghouse at work, from last year. And now her boss, who was, again, a really interesting character because her boss is so typical of that white woman who, in her mind, is a savior and, you know, loves people of all races, and I'm sure probably voted for Hillary, and like is such a, and probably fucked a black guy in college, and you know, maybe smokes a little weed and listens to like Stevie Wonder or whatever. So she thinks she's really down, but doesn't understand that she's got all these racist tendencies that, you know, and if you point them out to her, she's offended that you could think she's a racist because my best friend in college was black or something, you know what I'm saying?
Or because like she thinks she's down. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so she's killing Issa and, you know, Issa's just having a tough time with it.
And it seems it seems like the organization as a whole is in the midst of a struggle. Like a bunch of schools don't want their programming anymore. Like there's something going on as a whole with the organization.
Yeah. And an office that wasn't buzzing like it was before.
Right. Morale is down.
Morale's down. Yeah. It felt like it wasn't even as many employees as it was. It felt like it was like a smaller crew. Like it just didn't feel the same. You know, what did y'all, but let's jump over to Molly real quick. What did y'all think about the Molly Dro plot line?
I think that people want Dro to come out and say to his wife, hey, I'm fucking Molly, I'm gonna call you back, before they believe that he's being honest about this. I mean, I think we got an answer about whether or not Dro is telling the truth about his open relationship when his wife called
like
10 in the morning and he's like, I'm still at Molly's, I'm gonna call you back. But people are like, he didn't say anything. That's a lie by omission. I'm like, what do you expect him to say? What exactly is he supposed to say to his wife at that point? Like, as soon as I'm gonna fuck her one more time and then I'll be home? Like, he's at Molly's in the morning, of course.
And so saying, like, what is he doing at Molly's at 10 a.m.? Yeah. making pancakes.
I think what people are looking for is a more concrete piece of evidence that the wife knows, right? Like, they're looking for the aha moment.
I don't think we're gonna get that.
Well, I don't think that's gonna be the case. I mean, listen, one, it's a half hour show, right? That's for one. And for two, the show isn't necessarily about him. So it's one of those, and it's also a great, reeling people in sort of storyline, right? You don't know. There is a vagueness to that relationship that you're not quite sure. Now, like Jeff said before, like if we get a image of her out fucking with somebody, then it might be a confirmation.
I've been waiting for that. I don't think we would though
because she's like, she's super tertiary. Like the only reason Dro is...
You're talking about your wife?
Yeah, like there's no reason for us to see her.
We've seen her on camera is my point. It doesn't need to be a long drawn out scene. Right. But it could just simply be, him and Molly bump into, him and Molly are out and they bump into her and, Earl.
Oh my God, I want to see that so badly because I know the controversy it'll cause. Cause niggas say, like we talked about this before, niggas talk that old relationship shit until it goes the other way.
But he's already said that she's doing her own thing. So it's not like he doesn't know she's doing it. Like when he explained the open relationship, he was like, she takes her work trips. She does what she does. I don't ask her. Like he already said she does her thing.
Yeah. I mean,
she travels a lot for work.
It is. And it kind of is what it is. I personally was kind of blown away, but I was a little surprised that when she posed, the ultimatum to Dro, which was, either we're going to be friends and not fuck, or we're going to fuck and not be friends.
Yeah.
They both was like, well, let's just fuck. Because that was not, their relationship is a, almost a lifelong friendship. This is
They grew up next to each other.
So I was amazed at the ease in which the characters seemingly said okay. And then, but then obviously it was just for show, right? Like it was because, he obviously took that shit with a grain of salt and hit her up. Like, yeah, what's good? And then she's rolling her eyes and she's doing all of the theatrics and going through all this performative shit only to acquiesce to the request, right? Only to be there on time.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, again, obviously only the first episode, but it's, they put a nice amount of stuff into the
air. I also found it interesting too because it was sort of like the first time I felt like that Issa was like wildly ungrateful.
To Daniel,
ungrateful dude.
Yeah, I thought she was just really, really ungrateful. Like, it was like, yo, you could have just texted me back. Like, you could get the fuck off my couch.
How about that? Yeah, we're not a couple. You know what I'm saying? Like,
how about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You came in and like he was saying, like, why are you really here?
Right.
Like,
but the thing is,
other places.
But that's the other thing that I find interesting, and this is what I think makes the show interesting with the writing, right? Which is, he knows why she's there. He also knows why he let her in.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And they are both tap dancing around the very obvious thing. But this is what you do when you are in that weird space of not really being able to or wanting to put all your cards out on the table. And, listen, she doesn't have sex with him, but she gets all of the other things. She gets the protection. She gets the shelter. She gets to know that this dude is going to be there for her.
But the thing is that was her issue, is that she wanted the comforts of living boyfriend without them having a sexual relationship. That's why she went to Daniel. And yes. Daniel let her in because he was hoping he would fuck a couple times. So it's like both of them want something, but neither one of them actually want a relationship per se. But the reason Issa is mad is because she feels like with him fucking old girl while she's home and then not responding to her texts, and basically like she feels like once again she's chasing Daniel, and she feels like he broke some kind of contract. And he's just kind of like, bitch, we ain't fucking, so what's the problem?
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, he was definitely not putting the show
on. But he's also definitely, like, doing shit on purpose to tweak her. So both, because she won't fuck him. So they both need to figure out, like...
Yeah, it's just time. It's like shit to get off the pot. The both of you. Like, I'm definitely not looking at 10 episodes of that shit. Like, if they ain't figured that shit out by episode 3, nigga, like, if somebody either something... Something gonna happen.
Something gotta give.
I feel like that now we're developing Daniel's backstory though. So hopefully
we met his sister and his niece.
And when she was like, so who's gonna watch Jada? Issa or whatever the other girl's name is? Yeah. It was funny.
Also, I think we're gonna see, I feel like we're gonna see that the Lyft passenger who beat up the big guy. The little light skinned one.
Oh,
that guy? Gave him $50.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see him again. I think we're going to see him again at some point, you know, in some capacity.
Did I tell y'all, speaking of just HBO shit in general, did I tell y'all I missed my opportunity to be on Ballers?
You did.
You mentioned it, but you didn't give us no real details. So what happened, man?
So basically, I was like, yo, I really want to get on Ballers. Like, I don't care if I'm just an extra or whatever the case may be. Like, I want to get there. And boom. You know, when they say, you know, be prepared when you ask for stuff.
Be prepared.
And basically, I got an email like Tuesday, like, all right, you got to be in L.A. Because they were shooting in L.A.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I couldn't jump up. I just couldn't jump up and move. And I was like, fuck. Like, I was geeked.
He was ready to go.
I tried to make it happen. I couldn't.
Nigga figuring out what suit he going to wear.
Oh, nigga. Nigga, I had the garment bag out, nigga.
Ripped to go.
Yeah, well, man.
Maybe you'll get another shot at it.
Yeah, hopefully that'll come around again. I'm sorry, because you would have been so happy.
Yeah.
For real.
You'll get another shot. We'll put it in the universe.
Yeah. Pray for Sean to be back.
Yeah, pray for Sean to be on Ballers. I want to mention, I just want to mention the season finale of Claws. We didn't really cover it too much this season, but it was a really good season finale.
It was a really good season. It was even more crazy and more hijinks, but in a good way.
Yeah, a lot of it's over the top, as we know. It's meant to be over the top, but it was a lot of stuff going on, and the season finale was a cliffhanger, but it wrapped up really nice. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. And now I want to talk about Sam Smith.
I still missed what he said, but y'all told me.
They said he was listening. Somebody was listening to some Michael Jackson, and
Michael Jackson, Human Nature.
So Adam, he insulted Lambert, Michael and Stevie at the same time.
Him and Adam Lambert were listening to Human Nature, and he on an Instagram video, and Sam says, "I don't like Michael Jackson, but this is a good song."
Oh, so he didn't diss Stevie. Okay. Because I was about to say, you diss Human Nature, you diss Michael Anderson.
Yeah, he dissed Michael. So
people
went crazy, including myself.
You did.
Because I'm like, hey, man, you're a white dude from England. You have a voice. You can sing. You sing, kind of R&B soul kind of music. So how dare you, like, diss Michael Jackson, who's the king of, one of the kings of R&B. Like, who are you to say that, It was crazy.
But, Sam Smith is definitely not influenced by Michael Jackson in any way, shape, form, or fashion in terms of his style. He is influenced by, like, old Motel. He influenced by, like, where is he going?
I'm sorry, I was going to get some water.
Oh, okay, Jeffrey had a dry throat. Sam Smith, like, if Sam Smith said he didn't like some old crooner, that might be a problem. If he said he didn't like, I don't know, Otis Redding or... who else? Help me out, Sean. All them old singing Negroes. If he said he ain't like... one of them old singing Negroes. He said he ain't like the Temptations. You know what I mean? Then it might have been a problem. But Michael,
Here's my take on this.
Sam is a stand flat-footed and sing dude. He's not.
Well, that as well. Like, that's a very good point that I hadn't even really thought about. Right. But here's my thing, right? Like, is he required to like Michael Jackson?
No.
He didn't. I watched this thing, you know, and got about as much context as I could. He was not shitting on Michael Jackson. He did not intimate that Michael can't sing or that Michael was remotely untalented or anything. He says, I don't like Michael Jackson. Now,
right.
We know how I feel about the Beatles.
Right.
We know that. But there is no part of me that has any respect or understanding of music that would say that in the context of making them sound like they ain't shit.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't like them. They're rappers. Guess what, guys? I don't like DMX. How about that?
Right.
You don't like
that? How about that? I don't. I never did. And God bless him. He had a hell of a run and he made some great records. But that shit is not in my phone.
Right.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? And guess what? There's my favorites. There's niggas that feel like that for LL. There's niggas that feel like that for Rakim.
True.
It's just, he didn't say that Michael was untalented. Oh. He didn't say that. You understand what I'm saying? Like, to me, so when I see people, you know, lashing out at him and the manner in which they did, what it said to me was that, especially Stephanie Mills' remarks. Stephanie Mills.
Oh, wait, what Stephanie say?
Oh, Stephanie, you missed that?
Oh my God! She eviscerated him
she
on
killed
IG,
him.
And what she basically said was, what she said was equivalent to if she wasn't typing this out and they was in a private space, she would have been like, "You ain't shit, and your daddy ain't shit, and they should have raised you better." Yeah, they should have raised you better.
I really think that's an overreaction. I mean, I get it. Michael is, you know, beloved, and he's one of our greatest, and he's unslanderable, except that he's not, right? But like you said, Sam, again, I didn't see the video, but based on what you guys are saying, it wasn't slander. And what you missed me say, Jeff, when you got up, was Sam is a stand flat-footed and sing type dude. If a Justin Timberlake, if a Bieber, if one of them was like, I don't like Michael Jackson, then we would be like, you got to get the fuck up out of here. But it's not like anything in Sam, even though he is soulful, he's not modeled after a Michael Jackson type artist.
The offense to me was the longstanding issue of people who... yes, blue-eyed soul, right? There is an issue, and there is a valid issue, and black artists really don't like the fact that they have been out here grinding for years,
yeah.
They hone their craft, and just because somebody has a fucking accent and they're white, they get to just, you know what I'm saying?
They get it off.
They get everything. They get everything handed to them, right?
Yep.
And so what he got from Stephanie Mills was probably a 30-year buildup of feeling like our shit isn't respected, that you guys, that we're not respected, that we don't get those same opportunities, right? And how fucking dare you?
And
so it was almost like, exactly, it's almost like if Adele says, you know, Aretha's okay.
Right.
They'll string her ass up at high noon in Detroit.
But that one I understand.
Right there.
But that one I understand because, for example, if Sam had been like, I don't really fuck with Stevie, then I would have been like, okay, motherfucker, look here. You know, because that's different because clearly you have taken, you're influenced by Stevie. So if Adele said Aretha, like, clearly you're influenced by Aretha, right? But I can see that. And I mean, and yeah, he's going to catch it because he's a white boy and Mike, but Michael Jackson, what I think we also miss is that Michael Jackson was the biggest pop star in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not even about a white person disrespecting Michael Jackson, because Michael Jackson might be one of the few artists for which people really do not recognize him as a black man when they think about him and talk about him. So I don't know. I think it might be a little bit of an overreaction, but I get it.
It was.
Well, I was mad as shit.
You were. You was like, fuck that nigga and the horse
fuck
he rode
that
in
nigga.
On. And
fuck him and his fucking fuck him. Fuck Sam
Tito,
Smith.
Tito's son. He jumped on the Twitters.
Oh, did he?
Started going. Yeah, you look, man. The reality is that snowball. Stephanie Mills basically pushed that shit down the hill, and right. that avalanche was coming, come hell or high water. And if you wanted right. to get on, this was the time to get on. Right, because
right.
you can get these rocks off, and you can get these tweets off, and you can get all of that sort of shit. The reality is that he did not say anything remotely disparaging about Michael Jackson. He right. simply said he didn't like the music. That is fair. It is right. okay to say that, right? Like, you know what I'm saying?
It actually is really okay.
It really is. Like, we cannot get to the point where people cannot say that, like, because...
But we've been at that point. Like,
I'm sorry. That's the thing, nah, right? Like,
it's so bad.
We're at that point now. This reminded me, and this hearkened to the Stan culture.
Yes.
And one of the things that I loved about our generation and... I'm on the tail end of that. Jeff is probably on the front end of that. But with our generation, there was so many different artists that you liked and you enjoyed that, right. that you didn't feel this sort of, this venomous rival behavior.
The time we had it was Prince and Michael. That was it.
The question was who was better?
Right.
It wasn't, oh, this other one is terrible.
Yeah.
Right.
It was who
they're
was
both
better.
Great, but who's better?
They're both great. Who was better? Right. It's Larry and Bird. Right. It's Bird and Magic. Right. Like who's better? Not like the other one is terrible. Like that's where we are. Even, and not to go off into sports, but that's where we are with the LeBron Mike conversation. Right. Is no one talks about the attributes and no one talks about, you know, multiple artists. It's just like, if you love this one artist, that's the only artist you could love. That's the only artist you can't say shit about them. Like,
you can't compare them to any of the artists, even if it's a positive comparison. You can't say they were influenced by any other artist. You can't say it's awful.
It's whack and it's draining. And I hate that we're putting that level of intensity onto artists who had incredibly long careers and meaningful careers, like meat and potatoes to their shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't fucking compare. Like, don't bring nobody from the 80s and up to the 90s. Like, don't bring anybody into these conversations because it's not even comparable.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the same shit. But yeah, fuck Sam Smith anyway. But, now you brought it up, we obviously want to give our love and prayers to Queen Aretha Franklin.
She's at home in hospice care.
Yeah, in hospice care, which, you know, we all know means, you know, it's kind of like the beginning of the end. I don't know how much longer she has here, but, you know, when you
We're going to send some prayers, some good energy, man.
Exactly.
Because I know if she's good, she keeping tabs on all you niggas putting her in the grave early.
But you know what? But here's the thing. I blame her family for that. They released a statement that said she was critically ill. And I want to say that they were getting family sources saying that death was imminent. Like, they're the ones who said that they've been telling family to come say goodbye. They're the ones who say. So that is what started.
Yeah. And
now, granted, people got ahead of themselves and they were tweeting RIP Aretha and whatever, but the way the family did it basically really did make it seem like she was about to die.
Well, this is always a problem with a family of famous people, and there's no real spokesperson, which is in the Black family is the oldest boy.
Right.
The oldest boy going out there to speak to
brother,
them
or the oldest
brother going out there and talk to them folks.
Yeah. Or the oldest woman or the oldest daughter that went to college.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, but what happens is
she ain't finished, but she went 3 years down
to Tuskegee.
Yeah. Down Tuskegee.
She know how this media stuff work. Yeah.
But what happens is that when you start to get extended family coming to hospitals, you know, obviously she's not in a private hospital. She's going to be in a public hospital. Even if she's in private suites, there's still right. going to be a level of, you know, people whispering, oh, that's Aretha Franklin. And, you know, people will, you know, poke and prod. So right. When we say family sources, that may not have been, you know, her immediate family. That might have been the third cousin
yeah.
who is the son of, you know, right. somebody that got called up to come say their goodbyes. Right. And having gone through hospice, and I think even, you know, even Justice speak to this a little bit, having gone through with someone going through that, like, there is a part where you do tell folks, you know, come and say your piece.
Yeah,
so yeah. early on.
Your goodbyes, you're
early on, because you don't know.
Hospice, they, you know, they're in and out, and they're not really cognizant of what's going on.
Exactly.
Right, because they're drugged up to be comfortable.
Exactly. So that's
But here's part of the thing that was happening on the timeline, and I saw you comment on this, Sean, and I was actually on the other side of the argument. There's a woman who's a writer, and she sent out a tweet, and I'll admit, the wording of the tweet brought fire on her, but I understood where she was getting at. So to put in context, the statement from Aretha's family came out, what, like Sunday night?
Sunday.
So for example, I got a call from an editor Monday morning. Can you do a piece for us? Right? I turned in my piece on Tuesday morning. So this woman who's a writer tweeted on Tuesday morning, if Aretha Franklin dies, hire Black women to write about her. That was what the tweet said specifically.
Okay.
Now, mind you, again, I got a call from an editor on Monday morning. Editors were calling people on Monday to write long form pieces so they could have it ready for Aretha because people thought she was going to be dead by like the end of the week, right? Mm-hmm. So what she was saying was, hey, editors, as you're calling people right now, because she knew they were, instead of hiring these white men that you always hire to write about this stuff, get a Black woman to tell this Black woman's story.
Yep.
But what people responded and said was like, oh my God, you rushing her to the grave so you can get a byline. She didn't say hire me. You know what I mean? It's like, you rushing her to the grave so you can get a byline. This is so cold. This is so callous. Yes, the tone of the tweet was cold, but I understood she wasn't talking. She wasn't even talking really about Aretha. It was more like, let the people who can handle her legacy and handle her story tell her story. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe she could have phrased it differently. I don't know. But people were like attacking her for being greedy or for trying to get a check. And it wasn't even about her. It was about let Black women tell a Black woman's story.
Yeah.
But Sean, you were on the other side of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not the way I read it. And it reeked of, you know, hire me. Like, for example, you and I are, I would say we're friends. We communicate fairly regularly. Right. I did not know you were contacted about writing a piece. Right. Because that's what, right. That is what writers do. Right. Like, we prepare.
Right.
You simply create your content. Right. And you look for a place to place your content.
Right.
You do not go out there and say, hey, this person's on their deathbed. You should probably be looking to hire X, Y, and Z.
Right.
It definitely read that way. And even if it wasn't intended that way, that's the way, at least to me,
that's the way a lot of people took it.
That's the way it read. And it felt, I think that she was also, sort of also on the tail end of this self-grandizing shit that happens on Twitter, right? Where people are often, you know, really sort of looking to leverage themselves and leverage their space into opportunities and not necessarily doing the work, right? Literally just talking about or buzzing about and creating controversy about in order to ruffle the feathers to get the work. Mm-hmm. And I think that not only were you contacted, I think there were other people that were contacted.
Right.
I think that there were content creators who were actively trying to create a piece that would do her life justice, because it is almost impossible to write a piece about Aretha Franklin.
You just
can't do it. You can probably write a piece on a portion of her life, but you cannot encapsulate her life in a piece, even long form. So I say all that to say, while I understand that there is a need for Black women specifically to tell stories in which they are a part of, right? Because even if Aretha Franklin did not touch you directly, she directly impacted your upbringing, whether it was, you know, your mom or your grandmom listening to her, or whether your choir sung her version of something at the church, or whatever the case may be.
So many parts of her career and her life were about her Black experience. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it really was uniquely about her experience as a Black woman, between her ain't shit first husband who was a pimp, you know, having babies early, mama leaving, daddy is a Black preacher. You know, like, all of that is all her having issues with her weight and her image and, just all of that.
I understand it. I get it. I think it was poorly worded, to say the least.
Yeah.
I think, and I understood why people would feel that way, because there is a culture of that occurring.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true. Again, I conceded that it could have been phrased differently, but when I read it, my first thought was not, oh, she's trying to disrespect Aretha. It was, again, because I knew that in mainstream, because I got contacted by a mainstream outlet, not a Black outlet. And I'm just,
but that's the other thing.
I just knew that in mainstream newsrooms right now, they were putting their stories together.
But that's the other thing too. Now you understand how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
That would also be like me talking about something, the inner workings of television.
Right.
In a way that people don't understand.
They don't understand
and they will not comprehend that. Yeah. Or Jeff trying to explain how an album actually gets made versus what these niggas think.
Right.
Yeah.
What goes on when an album is made. They just don't know. And I think that it is incumbent upon us to understand when we're talking to laymen, right?
Yeah.
A lawyer has to be able to, you know, break down some shit without using lawyer jargon to a regular fucking person.
Right. Yeah. That's fair.
Well, like I said, we got our prayers up for the queen, and hope she somehow pulls through. I also wanted to mention this stolen plane. I saw this a guy who I'm looking for his, oh Bebo Russell was his name, Richard Bebo Russell. Worked in the airport there. And he stole a plane and just flew it around Horizon Airlines. He was a ground service agent. So basically he was one of the guys that get the bags off and, you know, directs the planes in and out of the airport. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm assuming he took some type of flight lessons at some point.
Yeah, because he knew how to get up, but he didn't know how to land.
Nah,
exactly.
He said
he played video games.
Yes.
Is that what it was?
He said it himself. He said he played a bunch of loop-de-loops
and shit.
Well, they said there were a ton of materials that could have at least given him some fairly basic knowledge of how to work a plane. He wouldn't know how to do the inner workings, because basically what they were saying was, look, a commercial aircraft is far different from them crop sweepers and shit that you see people flying. That's not the same thing. It's basically the equivalent to you driving a Toyota Camry versus driving a Formula One race car. It's not the same thing. That's pretty much. That was the issue, right? Like, he kind of got to a certain place and then panicked.
Right.
Yeah, because he didn't know what to do. Like I said, he's doing loop-de-loops, he's doing barrel rolls, and he's doing this all above water, you know, and he ended up crashing into an island in the Puget Sound.
Crashed. I'm using quotations here. I know you're the conspiracy theorist, but I ain't so sure them F1, them F-15s ain't blow his ass out the sky.
They could have took him down. No. I wouldn't be surprised. You can't just have a dude up in the sky with a plane just, you know, just rolling around doing whatever, you know?
Yeah. Right.
This, of course, like the statement comes out that apparently he was like this really fun loving upbeat guy, and everybody's shocked that he was actually depressed and nobody can understand, you know, why he was feeling this way, and, you know, But you know, something happened and something triggered it, man. It was just, I mean, look, I looked
there
at
was
it. Like,
did you read the printout or the transcription of the conversation between him and the air traffic
controller? I didn't read the whole thing, but I saw it in the CNN story. He was talking about, he's like, yo, just got a few screws loose. And,
yeah.
You know, it was really sad.
And he was afraid that when he was like, if I land, because they wanted him to land on the military base.
He was like,
no, you know, they're going to do something to me and, you know, whatever. Like, it was really sad.
Yeah.
And it was sad in part because he was making jokes, but they were like sad jokes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I know I'm going to die type joke.
Yeah, like, you think Alaska Airlines will hire me? Ha ha. You know, like that type of thing. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, what it did was it definitely highlighted another issue of security in the military.
Yeah, how do you steal a whole fucking
plane? A whole ass plane.
How do you get in the cockpit, how does all of that happen? Getting
in the cockpit, and this is another thing they said that he might have also had knowledge of that particular plane from servicing it and having the crew, you know, like the captains and them on there. Like, he might have been talking with them and, yo, you know, what is this doing?
You know
what I'm saying? And they were probably very loose with an airline employee.
I'm sure it can,
from what I understood, there's something like 12,000 people like that kind of get access.
Right.
Like that.
That's a lot.
Like, that is an enormous amount of people. But yeah, again, the assumption is that the fucking dude who's a mule for the baggage claim doesn't have the first inclination or clue as to how to even back that plane out.
Right.
I mean, yep. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that's something that we sort of relied on, and it's just not something we can rely on now, because the digital age has proven to us that people have access to this stuff and they can do this and they are willing to do this. They talked about, you know, potentially having sort of mental health reviews for people who do have access to these planes.
So else can take a plane and just go on.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, whatever, you know, was this a plan? You know, I don't know. Was this a heat check? My concern was that it took, in my opinion, that it took that long, you know, when the air traffic controller when the air traffic controller is basically asking him to identify himself as he's going into the takeoff place. Like, yo, who are you? Like, what the fuck is going on? And I'm saying to myself, like, my thing is, it don't matter what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, you got to come down.
If there's a plane going to the fucking takeoff strip, dude, like, it is there. If there's never been a time to ring every alarm there is, it was that time. So the fact that he was able to get up in the air, like you said,
it might be right there. He might have got shot down.
That's why I'm thinking he got shot down, because the air traffic controller was saying that he was trying to talk him into landing the plane.
So he wouldn't get shot down.
Basically, when he confirmed that, he said, yo, I didn't plan on landing it.
Right.
That, those were his words. I didn't plan on landing it. I'm like, dude, you got to go.
Right.
And I looked at pictures and I didn't see a plane that was like big pieces.
Right. Yeah, like it was disintegrated. Yeah, it might have took his ass down.
I think they did, because they were tailing him.
Yeah, they definitely were.
And I think they were just waiting to get to a safe place. All I know is that somebody told me, because I was getting off the plane from L.A. when this was happening, and somebody, because I was trying to figure out what happened, and somebody told me he crashed and burned, literally. But I think he was shot down.
Yeah, it probably was.
And I probably and again, it was a suicide mission, probably. So they just probably wanted to make sure he didn't take anybody else out.
Omarosa Manigault.
Newman.
Fuck her.
Is in the news for the past these solid week. Well, I'm,
and she's probably like loving. She's loving this so much.
Oh yeah, she's done every. Oh, God, she's done every.
Hate
she's done every show. Like,
I hate
everything.
It. I hate it. I hate her so.
She did
much.
Like Colbert. She's done to Today Show. She did CBS Morning News, Face the Nation. Like, she's
done
popping.
Yeah,
right,
she's got all of them.
So book is number two in the country. It's being held out at the number one spot by some Christian book called Girl Wash Your Face. I never heard of that book, but apparently
I don't think it's a Christian book. I think it's just an advice book.
Okay.
Self help book.
Okay, yeah, but it's obviously very popular because it's holding her out at number one. Yeah. But she's been on all the news shows, you know, talking about her book and talking about how heinous the Trump administration is and how Donald Trump has called people niggas and said all kind of other shit. She also has tapes, according to sources, up to 70 tapes of different things that have gone on in the White House while she was there. And it's put some black folks in a very precarious situation because it's like we hate the Trump administration. We hate everything that they're doing to the country and minorities in general. But we don't fuck with Omarosa either. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like you cheer on somebody you hate. Because you know she heinous and she don't fuck with niggas either, really. But she's taken it upon herself to do anything she could do to bring the Trump administration down. Like I've been saying to y'all, I'm actually enjoying watching this. Not because I'm caping for Omarosa at all, but I'm just enjoying somebody just going at them as ruthless as they go at everybody else.
True.
You know, now I don't know if that means she's gonna take him down, or if it means anything she has is gonna get him impeached, because we don't know what's on these tapes. If she even has tapes, we don't know. She's played two tapes, but which has some more. But like, I'm just enjoying like somebody playing their game against them, because that's one of the things that, and we've discussed this on this show before. That's the issue with the Democrats. They still trying to play by the rules.
Right.
And the Republicans is like, fuck that. B, ain't no rules. And we doing what we want to do.
Right.
And fuck you. And so now they have Omarosa playing that same game back at them. And you can see they're shook because they don't know what she has
on
everybody in there.
Well, here's the thing. So the bombshell, I don't think Omarosa has anything super disparaging against Trump, period, unless... Because she doesn't have the nigga tape. And she said that. She doesn't have it. She hasn't heard it.
She knows somebody has a copy of it.
But there's also like some... Because Mark Burnett himself won't release it But also there's like a...
Proprietary.
Like, and Trump can sue him for like some nominee. Something like that.
I read today. Apparently... I think it was on CNN I read. Apparently the NDAs that Trump and his administration are having people sign who work for him in the White House are apparently not really worth the paper they're on. This is
I don't know how much of an NDA, a personal NDA you can give somebody who works in the White House beyond what goes into their regular security clearance and job description.
Which is why Omarosa is going so ham, because that whatever she signed is not binding.
And they are but the Trump campaign is suing her.
They filed a lawsuit
against her for breach of NDA. But here's the thing. The conversation has now been, okay, so the nigga tape exists, which I don't think anybody black ever doubted it exists. But like, would it make a difference if it came out? And I was one of the people who were like, no, it absolutely would not. But a couple of people said something that I actually kind of gave pause and thought about. White people will excuse every dog whistle, every microaggression, all of that. They will come up with some reason for it. But once you say nigga, that's when they're like, oh, racism. Mm-hmm. Like, and some of them will only call it racism if you say nigger.
If you go that
so
far.
I'm wondering if, and not because they're surprised you said it, but because once it's out there in public, they have to address it. So
what you think, bro?
Maybe
not me. Ain't nothing gonna happen. If anything, I think it's gonna fire up his base even more for him. I think it makes
his base.
I think it makes sense.
But the remaining.
Yeah, but
GOP,
the base is. Yeah,
the GOP
but the
may have to distance themselves.
They're not gonna distance themselves any more than they already have at this point, right? Which is all it's all for show anyway, right? Like the reality is that they're trying to push through their agenda, and they need, you know, to have that president there. And that base is also gonna be the people that they need to vote for them. And that's a part of what it is. I mean, this is the cycle. I don't think that this is going to. The man said, grab these women, just grab them by the pussy. Like he literally says this on tape and 59% of women went and voted for him.
Yeah.
So I don't know why would I, there's nothing about saying the word nigga that would make me feel like that is going to put Trump in any sort of situation that's going to increase his ability or the probability of him being impeached or taking any sort of hits publicly. His ratings, you know, his overall ratings, his numbers are shit. They've been shit. And, you know, this investigation is still chugging along and we'll see how it goes. But the reality is this doesn't move the needle at all. And you know what? He does so much stupid, crazy shit. This is going to be a thing by next week. It's not even going to be a thing by next week.
My thing is Omarosa, she says she has a lot more tape, so I'm very curious.
I don't care what, look, man, I feel she's a lot of things. One of the things she is incredibly masterful at shifting conversation.
Yes.
And she stays on target with her message, and she gets those sound bites in the news and then the press. If Omarosa had actually had gone to law school, Jesus Christ.
Agreed. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Like she's masterful at that shit, and she is poised. It is bullshit, but she's handing you poised bullshit. Now, yeah. What she won't do is sit here and one of the things black folks are usually on board with is we are not okay with letting outsiders talk about us.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And we will draw that line in the sand quickly. And she's depending on that. Mm-hmm. She's absolutely depending on
like we hate her, but we ain't gonna let you talk bad about it.
We hate her, but we hate you more, and so we're gonna stand by her, right? And she understands intimately black culture, how we move, how we think, right?
Absolutely.
And so for her to sit there and have been an aide to this man as he has not only. Like, he has routinely talked down to and been dismissive of black women in particular. Like, Maxine Waters, like, you sat idle with that shit. You never went on a press run. You never said anything. You didn't tweet shit. You didn't use social media.
Until the day after, like, literally the day after she left office, all of a sudden it's so bad in there. Trump's a horrible racist. But she was up in there sitting pretty. She hadn't got fired.
That's all this is. And when I listen to this tape of Kelly and I'm listening to her and I'm like, she really doesn't seem to know how any of this works. She's asking the chief of staff, his fucking title is chief of staff. Bitch, that's the chief of the staff.
Top of the line. Yeah.
Right. I don't understand how or why you think that should be on the radar of the president because that's why he has a chief of staff, right? Like this, she is beyond like unbearable. I don't care what happens to her. I don't give a fuck what happens to her.
April Ryan's throwing mad shots at her because obviously they had their
beef. But then they also come around because. This is what black women do. This is what black people do is we are not going to sit idle while you dog whistle and call her a dog.
A dog, like that. Yeah.
Guess what, man? Guess what? I don't fucking care. You know why I don't fucking care? Because for two years, she was over there licking ass and doing what she needed to do for her. And you know what? She made that bed. And I'm not even mad. I'm indifferent to her. I'm literally indifferent to her. If this happens to her, whatever. If they sue her and they win and she has to go move into a fucking two-bedroom and got to look for a fucking futon on Craigslist, I don't know what to tell you.
I'll be, The wild thing about April, and, you know, full disclosure, I think I mentioned on the show before, like, we went to school together. I mean, I haven't seen her in years, but, you know, we went to class together.
I thought y'all was cousins or something.
No. We ain't no kin now. But it's kind of wild because April's been going at her neck because they had their issues, and I get it. But on the other side, I'm like, yo, April, but, like, you, Sarah Sanders be, like, dissing you crazy. And you'll never go at her neck.
But you know, she does.
She does, but also too.
Yeah, she does. She stays. There's also an expectation. Sarah stays going in April, but you know.
There's also an expectation of black folks that again, there's an expectation of having a line drawn in the sand right. of the shit that we just okay. You can't do this.
Right.
Okay. This is where we're drawing the line, and that's what has been so fascinating is to watch how he has treated Maxine Waters, how this administration has treated black people in general, and she and like I said, even that whole HBCU bit, man, that was all a ploy for her to be able to go back to them. She knew that shit was going to be a shit show, and
you know it.
But guess what? They owe her. They owe her. And she's going to call on them favors. She's going to call on them favors now. She's going to call on them favors when she, like, when she goes into the
private. I got that money to you, President so-and-so.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was good.
And that is the, if you watch her, it is a masterclass in conniving and just being a duplicitous. Like the way she moves is insane to me.
But that's why Trump liked her.
Yes.
And exactly. I also want to point out, not that we're surprised, but Trump literally said, and this is like his lack of self-awareness is fucking astounding, really. It's a case study. But he said that John Kelly, which I believe Kelly told her, you know, Omarosa was consistently late. She wouldn't show up to work. She wouldn't come to meetings. Kelly had been advising Trump to fire her. And Trump kept her around because she only ever said nice things about him.
I believe all of that.
I 100% believe that. And this is what Trump said out of his... But, like, do you not realize that you are the president of the United States and you say that you kept a senior staff member around who, by all accounts, was performing poorly because she only said nice things about you? Like, we all know this about you. We all know how easy it is for somebody to ingratiate themselves to you. But, like, son, for real... Do you know what you just admitted? He's so stupid. This whole shit is a clown show. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fuck her still.
Yeah, she's a mess. Let's talk a little bit about Nicki Minaj. Her album came out last Thursday night. The rollout was a
disaster.
Terrible, terrible rollout. She had a big radio show on.
She took over Beats.
Yeah, Beats Radio called Queen, changes to Queen Radio. It was a big build up. She had a lot of, you know, kind of quote unquote celebrity women come to the show and came to find out she couldn't even play the album because I guess it was some samples or whatever, some issues with the album. So it kind of came 2 hours of her just kind of ranting. She, you know, cursed the president of the label out on the air, you know what I'm saying? Like, so on the phone, like, in a conversation. Just so much mess. Then the album didn't come out till 12 noon on Friday, when the album usually come out midnight the night before. And then the course of that, she ended up...
Not even Friday, it came out on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, Saturday, and then she ended up going at several people, DJ Self, Safari, low-key, subtle shots at Cardi.
That's everybody. Basically just doing everything except talking about her own goddamn album.
Yeah, just
she's
going hard.
Doing everything except talking about her album. Got the Barbs riled up. Right now, the Barbs have been attacking a Tracy Chapman fan account on Instagram. Not even Tracy Chapman herself.
Yeah, because
a fan account.
Because they couldn't get a sample cleared.
Wouldn't clear the fast car sample. Baby Will I Hold You Tonight sample. And like, I'm like, y'all niggas don't even know who Tracy Chapman is, you fucking idiots. Like, but that's the thing. Like, she encourages this behavior in her fans. And literally Nicki's fans, Beyonce's fans might be the most annoying, but Nicki's fans are the most toxic. They are just mean.
They're definitely the meanest.
They're mean and stupid. Like, they're so fucking stupid. And, like, one of them lost their job because they all were all taking off work to stream the album all day, which I don't really understand. And,
yeah, like, what are you doing?
Well,
like,
it's something to get the streaming numbers up for some shit. And every bit of press she's been doing has been a disaster because, again, she's been talking about everything except the album. Like, you're doing an album. You named it Queen. That's supposed to be about upliftment and positivity. And all you're doing in every interview is talking shit. And, yeah, like, but nobody really looks bad but you. Cardi's at home with her baby, chilling, right? Safari is cracking jokes. He's fine. He don't give a fuck about this shit, clearly. And I mean, honestly, you look worse than he does because you're actually the person of higher stature. Like, you should really just shut up. And, like, she just looks, she looks crazy. She looks crazy. And even fucking Kim is back on the charts, which I love. Which, by the way, okay, y'all, so Lil Kim's,
yeah,
hardcore ended up back on the iTunes charts the other day.
And so did the other one, came in low.
Now the other one has, the Notorious K.I.M. So me, Jeff, and Sean had a conversation the other day where I was saying, of course it's about Nicki because Dreams is the most popular song on her album. But literally every time people brought up Dreams, the counterpoint was, okay, but Kim remade Biggie's Dreams first. She did it 20 years ago. It was better, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, people went to hear it. That brought and bought it, and that put her back on the iTunes charts. And Jeff was like, no, but how you do that? Because nobody else that she mentioned is on the charts. So, Jeff, did you ask the sales
team? Did I sound like that?
You did sound exactly. Well, I mean, that's how I read it. That's how I read it on the text. That's how I read it on the text. Did you ask your sales team?
I did ask the sales guy.
And what did they say?
He said it was because of Dreams.
Thank you. So you need so since you always like the people acknowledge when you were right, I need you to say, Naima, you were right.
Oh my God, bro, you hear this shit?
But yes. Does he not, Sean? Does he not sit there and say, for the record, I just need everybody to know I was right? You do it all the time, Jeff. So I need you to say, Naima, okay, you were right.
Oh my God. Okay, Naima, you were right.
You can't even say it. Thank you. Jeff was like, you reaching. I'm a marketing person. When this would happen, when music spikes, you try to connect the dots. I kind of do this. So thank you, Jeffrey. But of course, there was literally no other thing it could have meant. But okay. Anyway, moving on. So Nicki is playing herself and this is about to be her lowest debut ever?
Yes. She's coming in number one, but she's doing about a 100-something thousand less than she did the last time.
Well, she's on the VMAs this weekend, so we'll see what second week looks like. But I expect this performance to be a fucking disaster. Because no way, I don't know when she's been rehearsing with all the bullshit she's been doing this week.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. She's just unfocused and just seems to be out here trying to, like, settle scores and just, you know, I don't know what's...
Oh, we lost Jeff. And I know, Sean, you can't get too much into it, but, like, the latest thing she said today, which was a shot at Cardi, was talking about major labels pushing her competition, or her competition being supported by major labels. Like, Young Money Cash Money is not some indie label that operates out of, like, a corner, like a box office. You know what I'm saying? Like, Nicki hasn't been out here with, like, low budgets, just trying to grind it out with, like, you know, I mean, it's so disingenuous and it's such bullshit, especially considering how big her campaigns have been, how much, you know, the budgets that she's been working with, the type of support she's had. It's just all, like, she's just flailing. I don't know who her publicity person is, but there's clearly, like, no talking points. There's been no conversation about controlling the narrative. There's been no conversation about spin. Like, she shouldn't be engaging in conversations about Safari. She shouldn't be engaged. You know what I mean? Like, she should be keeping it cute. And directing it back to her album and her songs and her features and whatever. And then also she said something today that got Atlanta people mad. She said she included Future because he has a good catalog to be from Atlanta or something like that. And motherfuckers was like, wait, what? Like, didn't you get discovered by an Atlanta rapper, ma'am?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is absolutely a lot. It would be best if folks were talking about the music. And what happens is that with all of the media outlets, with all of the social media and how quickly and how fast these things pick up and change, you know, people deal in the salacious.
Yeah.
And they want to see that. They want to hear that. And there were some things that were said and there were claims that were made that were pretty significant and pretty substantial. And that's what people locked into. And literally, since that album has dropped, I haven't heard one person talking about the actual music.
Nothing except literally except for Dreams.
Yeah.
That's been it.
And I think, you know, she's probably on the last leg of this level of press.
Right.
You know, this is probably going to wrap up by this week.
Yeah. Because I mean, this
top of next week.
Yeah. This is her promo week. So
yeah, this is a promo week. You might get a couple things here and there, you know, at the top of next week. But, you know, listen, by this time next week, or, you know, when you get to September, these looks are gone. They've moved to another place. So I don't know what any of this means. You know, I wish everybody well. And that's it.
We were just saying how, you know, Nikki's been talking about everything but the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally, and all the press she's been doing, she's just all over the place with it. And how bad of a look it is for her. But that's been the energy this week all the way around. This seems to be like, let me attempt to air people out week. In some cases, working better than others. Like, you got Omarosa dropping the videos. You got Nikki and Safari going back and forth. You got, now today, Teyana Taylor leaving the Jeremiah tour. Saying that she's being mistreated by him and his team. You got somebody from Awkward Black Girl trying to get an Issa. It's just been a messy, messy, messy week. Oh, and you got Robert Glasper
airing
out Lauren, basically saying not anything that's new information, but it seems to be gaining traction in a way that it hasn't before. Basically saying that, like, Lauren stole the music or didn't do all she said she did on Miss Education.
Yeah.
Didn't pay the producers, didn't pay, you know, the musicians, and that she basically is just a horror to work with, and that she hasn't done enough to have the ego that she has with people working with her, like saying that it's true that you're told not to look her in the eye and you must call her Miss Hill and all this other stuff. So, and people are listening who never listened before, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, Lauren did that, who knew? And it's like, we all knew, what are you talking about?
Well, but you know, we have to remember that album is 20 years old, so there's a lot of people who weren't around.
Well, no,
who
but
around when that album first came out, so like,
I know, but it's been a conversation, like almost every time that there's a whole rash of cancellations or her being late, people bring it up. I just think it depends on what conversations you're following. But
this
Robert Glasper statement apparently got through to the masses.
Yeah. Cause he just did, I think he did the interview yesterday.
A couple days. Yeah, yesterday, I think.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it was yesterday.
The point of that interview wasn't that she stole the music. I think first of all, I think stole is, that's.
Well, she didn't, wrong.
She
didn't give credit.
Well, she didn't credit.
She did not give them, she did not give them credit.
And she let the world believe that she did it all herself.
I think that was all the plan and all the ruse with the, you know, everyone wanted this to be a Lauren record, right?
Right.
I mean, it was supposed to be this very personal record. And I think that everyone was like, okay, we're cool with that, until they just weren't cool with that. Right.
Yeah. Until the record exploded and they weren't making money.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Right. So the reality is what he was really saying was, she's a terrible person to work for.
Yeah.
Right.
She's a terrible, like, that's what people missed. You know what I'm saying? That's what he was trying to say.
It's like really righteous lady and nice lady.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that is what's been sold.
Yeah.
Right. We're for the people and we love each other and we don't need paperwork and boundaries. And then it was, we cut y'all pay in half. Y'all good with that.
Right.
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But people are finally listening now. I mean, listen, there is a whole thing. Somebody hit me because there is a school of thought that the industry blackballed Lauren. And I'm like, the fact that y'all think that the music industry would not want an artist who's had been part of two albums that were as massively successful as The Score and The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, that you think that the industry, which is a business, would actually want to silence that artist is absurd. And people are like, but she was too woke and she was doing too much. And I was like, what wokeness was she doing that nobody else was doing, that Erica wasn't doing, that, you know what I mean? Like, she was part of the neo soul movement. Everybody was woke. Everybody was burning sage.
Yeah,
everybody
that's what was going on.
Like, what the fuck? That's what it was. Like, she wasn't saying nothing. She wasn't saying shit profound. Not shit.
In the words of my very good friend Jeffrey Sledge, these niggas is dumb, man.
But like, you prefer to believe that than believe that she can't duplicate the album because she didn't do it by herself.
And then I saw folks saying, well, what about the producers? Listen, that often happens. Producers, they're people, man, that you might only get one or two shots.
Yeah.
And this is why it is important and it is vital that your fucking I's are dotted and your T's are crossed.
Right.
Because if that record explodes, if that record pops off, it is life altering money.
Yeah.
You wanna ask the dude who fucking produced Ice Ice Baby and why fucking Suge had to go get them points?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Cause it changes your life.
Yeah. Right.
And you never heard another record from him?
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Ever. 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 This Nicki thing is really, I think in hindsight, we're going to look back and it's going to be like, you know, a sad thing because, like, it's, you know, she's obviously having a lot of issues internally with herself, with maybe her, it feels like her management team and the label. It feels like to me that they're all just kind of tired and fed up.
They definitely got to be exhausted.
And exhausted with her just kind of just going ham on them nonstop all day, every day. Like I said, she called the CEO of Universal and blasted him on air, had the conversation with him on the air, blasting him. That's not fly. Like, that's
like
not,
Monty fucking Lipman, like the nerve.
Yeah, crazy.
Like the what fucking, are you doing? Like of Universal, not of a Def Jam, of the parent company to the major labels. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, are you kidding
me? And going crazy on them. So it's like, I'm sure it feels like there's a lot of people that are just fed up and done. She's burned a lot of bridges. She's done some things that are not, you know, nice. Her, like Nia said earlier, her fans are heinous. You know, they do the, like, I mean, talking about Cardi's baby, talking about Lil Kim's daughter, just
they're
like
awful.
They are to me the equivalent, and I said this the other day, like one of the things that I used to love going to baseball games, right? Mm-hmm. But like one of the things that has stopped me from going to baseball games and even to football games, right, is like these rabid fans.
Yeah.
Right. That's what they feel like to me. They have absolutely made her music and trying to enjoy the part of culture that she is a part of, like, they make it not enjoyable. You don't want to be a part of it
because you can't be around it.
Because you can't participate in it, right?
Right.
Because a part of culture is the critique.
Yeah.
A part of culture is knowing, you know, when you can throw a jab or it's a joke, or you can kind of read between the lines. Most smart people know when something is a joke and when something is being, you know, a venomous attack.
Right.
And there is no in between.
Yeah.
Like none. And these niggas search her name and they will go through the things and the lengths that they will go. Like it will not surprise me if someone is killed. And I'm like not saying that.
Yeah, I'm not for real.
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
And what, like, and what's
bad about
someone's
address
and
somebody
ran
up
with somebody. Yeah. And what's bad is that Nicki doesn't stop it.
No, she encourages it.
She just encourages it. She doesn't say, hey, y'all, that's too much. Don't talk about a baby like that. Or don't talk about that little girl like that. She her silence is deafening.
Yeah, but no, you know, I think at times she has literally been like,
yeah, she's like, yo, get him. Like,
yeah,
get him.
Which is not okay. And she, you know, and she, and at one point she was contributing herself, which is also like incredibly, like it was, and it wasn't even regular clapback. Like, for example, Cardi has clapback, if you want to call, I actually hate that term, but Cardi has responded to a few fans who were like disparaging her, but it was more like critique of talent. But like, well, she would get back and defend herself. Mm-hmm. Nicki will go back and attack the other person. And those are two different things.
Yeah.
So like, today somebody was, I guess, echoing what Nicki said about the major label push. And Cardi was basically like, everybody wants to say the label did all this shit for me. And if it was that easy, why don't they do it for every artist? Like, it's not that simple. Why, like,
everybody don't buy a number one.
Yeah. Like, I worked hard for every fucking thing I did. And matter of fact, I was getting at the label at first about a single that didn't connect. And they were like, it just ain't it, you know? Yeah. So that's different. She's defending her work ethic. Nicki will be like, fuck you, you ugly bitch, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And it's just, first of all, Nicki's 35, right? Like, you're too old as a person for this shit.
Yeah, to be doing all this shit.
Oh, and you're too established as an artist to do this shit.
Yeah.
And it's tacky, and it's cheapening your brand, and it's ugly. Like, it's horrible. It's horrible. And even I can just tell that she's an evil person in real life. Yeah, we were saying that. We were saying Safaree still looks better than she does in this. Like, technically, she shouldn't even be responding and engaging with Safaree, considering her statue versus his, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, okay, he's a fuck nigga, I guess. He has some fuckboy tendencies, okay. But, like, you talking about, you know, the hairline, and you pay for this money, and it's like, damn, man. Like, damn. Like,
I just would.
You giving up, like, secrets that you and him shared. Like,
there's a level. Yeah, I mean, when there is. You want to be able to feel like with intimate people, man, like there's a level of, okay, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm going to go right up to this line,
but I'm not going to cross.
And then I'm going to chill. I'm never going to cross that line.
But like, if he brought up her ass, everybody would be like,
oh my God. Yeah. Oh, he's canceled and da da da.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I dead ass think if he did that, it wouldn't even be canceled. Like, I honestly think that nigga would have to, like, consciously be worried about, like, some dude, like, trying to slash him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, it's
for real.
Crazy. Like, for it's real. Crazy.
Yeah. And again, and Nicki's silence probably would be deafening. You know what I'm saying? She probably wouldn't say anything about it.
Oh, wait. Speaking of ass, can I bring up one more thing before we go?
Mm-hmm.
So, Lala produced and narrated a special for BET called Killer Bodies. And it was about, specifically, it was about butt augmentation. And it's got K. Michelle in it, because K. Michelle recently had all her implants removed from her ass and her hips. And it's got Melissa Ford as a counterpoint, because Melissa says that all her shit is natural. But she's talking about the video Vixen influence on this whole body ideal. And it's got a couple of other people in it. One person who, like, lost their limb, lost their hands, their feet, and obviously lost their buttocks because they got necropsy. When your appendages basically just turn black and die.
Mm.
Christ. And one woman who a couple of years ago, y'all might remember the story. She actually was convicted.
I remember that.
Of, you know, giving unlicensed injections, but her own ass had like a gigantic hole in it, right? Mm. So all these people on talking about this thing, and here's the thing: it was interesting and it was informative, and I think it was important, and I think it was well done. Except that it's Lala's production, Lala's narrating, but Lala, bitch, you had augmentation,
and she don't say
shit about it, and to me, that makes the whole shit disingenuous, because or your best friend, hello, and it's like, it makes the whole shit disingenuous, especially because it's not even just because somebody was like, well, she didn't have a legal augmentation. I'm like, well, neither did K. Michelle, you know what I mean? And there was some, and there was even somebody who was talking about the positive side of it, a girl who said she went to Brazil, and as of right now, like, she's good, but it wasn't dramatic, you know, she got a fat transfer or whatever. So it's like, there's no reason, unless if you're doing this documentary to remove shame and stigma from your body type and from having these conversations about the pros and cons, but you yourself aren't going to acknowledge your own, then to me, it almost renders the whole thing null to me. So I just had to put that out there, because I was really irritated by it. Y'all niggas both go to sleep on me? Y'all both?
No.
Okay.
I'm here.
I was just irritated. I think we lost Jeff. Jeff,
no, I'm back. Yeah, okay. It froze up.
Okay. But it was just irritating to me. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it yet. But I do agree. It's like, if you are going to do a story like that or a piece like that, and you've had the surgery done, I mean, you don't have to kind of like, you know, you don't have to show your scars or anything like that. But it would have been nice if you would have just at least mentioned that you had had surgery done. You didn't have to go deep with it. Just
mention
that you had all the patients.
In the narration, you could be like, I myself got it done and whatever.
And
for me, it's been fine, but it's not been the case for everybody, you know.
Changed
your whole body type, Ma. Like, your whole body type.
Yeah,
changed the whole shit.
Yeah, she looks totally different. From
like, you went from a square to a pear. Like, that don't, the gym don't do that.
Yeah, never.
Squats.
Never.
That's what the niggas been selling for IG.
Squats.
They still selling them dreams.
And drink your flat tummy tea.
And you too could get an ass like
this. You too could get an ass like this. You know?
Nah.
So, yeah, on that note, Lala, we're going to wrap it up. we will see y'all next week.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.